This is Austin, a Radiolab listener in Madagascar. Radiolab is supported by the New School for Social Research, offering a master's in creative publishing and critical journalism that unleashes students' curiosity and ability to change the world with words. More information at newschool.edu/NSSR.
Hey, this is Jad. We're in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania at the Gettysburg Military Museum. Radiolab is supported by Squarespace, the all-in-one website building platform that feeds your creativity and curiosity. Squarespace helps you grow your ideas online. For a free trial and 10% off, visit squarespace.com/radiolab.
Wait, you're listening.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
You're listening to Radiolab.
Radiolab.
From
WNYC.
See?
Yep.
I'm Robert Krulwich.
I'm Molly Webster.
This is Radiolab.
And this week, Jad is off, nestled into his office, working on the next episode, which will play with a lot of the ideas that came up in our last Gary Hart podcast, but like with pop stars and music.
Meantime, we've decided to offer you guys a little Valentine's treat. It's going to be part prose, part musical in a hip-hop sort of way, with some extremely cool guests.
Really?
Yes. Oh, I promise you, yes.
Okay.
At the end of the show. And it all grows out of a tale we heard about a very small animal, which begins appropriately with a very small noise.
Yeah, so in days gone by, people tended to die at home. This is go back a couple of hundred years before there were hospitals and so on.
This, by the way, is David Goulson.
I'm a professor of biology at the University of Sussex in the UK.
And he told this tale to producer Latif Nasser and I.
So you imagine that you know, grandpa's ill and looks like he might die soon. Sorry, I don't know why that's funny, but... so he'd be lying in bed upstairs and everyone would be, out of respect, would be very quiet. You know, they'd be creeping around the house. It was a time called the Death Watch. And when everyone was really quiet, they'd hear these faint drumming noises coming from the timbers of the house. I can try and do an impression of the noise, actually.
Yeah, I'd love to hear you. Yeah.
May not work very well, but bear with me.
Yeah.
Do you get that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, five or six identical beats. And legend has it that this was the devil drumming his fingers, impatiently waiting for the soul to depart the body so that he could claim it.
Ah.
But turns out, actually, it's the mating call of a tiny little beetle. The Death Watch beetle. That's where it gets its name.
So Dave became a kind of a fan of these beetles.
Ooh, yeah. It's a widespread species. And, you know,
and in fact, he's got a house that's full of them.
It's pretty decrepit. It's slightly falling down. The roof leaks and whatever. But it's home to a whole host of these little beetles.
And in the quiet, he can hear them. So a while ago, he found himself wondering, what's this noise really all about?
Which you might not think would be a great mystery. But
what he discovered is it's all about love. Or at least sex. So today, a story that reminds us how difficult, lonely, how hard the mating game can be.
Perfect Valentine's Day.
No, it'll get better. So we will begin at the beginning.
The life cycle. Yeah. So the female beetle lays an egg on a piece of dead wood.
And Dave said he would watch them, and the moms would just, you know, drop their babies randomly. Some here, some there, usually into a hole in a log or into a wood beam.
And it hatches into the little tiny white grub. So you imagine this little thing, pitch black, you know, in its own little tunnel on its own. And it starts chewing. It chews away at the wood very, very slowly. And eventually, about 10 or 15 years later...
Well, years? It's going to chew for 10 later, to 15 years.
Yeah, for a decade or more. Poor things. And eventually, it reaches the magnificent size of about a quarter of an inch, at which point it pupates, so it turns into a little chrysalis. And a few months later, the adult beetle hatches out of that.
And so finally it crawls out of the log and onto the surface.
Is that the first time they see light?
Yeah, yeah, that would be it.
Oh, wow.
And so it's only the adults that you ever really see. And they're possibly the most boring looking insects you could imagine.
Really?
They're about a quarter of an inch long, bullet shaped, dull brown. They're really easily mistaken for mouse droppings, actually. And the adult only has really one job, and that's to mate.
So the male beetle,
he has to find himself a female. So he's got his work cut out.
For one thing, as an adult, he doesn't eat.
He can't feed, so he's going to starve to death in a couple of weeks or so.
On top of that, he's nearly blind.
Yeah, and that's where this strange drumming noise comes in. That's their way of finding each other in the usually rather dark places where they live.
That's your way of saying, hello? Hello?
Yeah, and they make it by drumming their head. So the male beetle, he kind of braces himself, and then he whacks his head 5-6 times.
Oh, you say drumming the head, you mean banging the head.
Yeah, it's like headbutts the timber he's sitting on with his kind of forehead, if you like. So that's what makes the drumming noise. He's basically whacking his head against the wood.
So he comes out of his hole,
just wanders about, and does his little drumming noise.
Now, if a human happens to hear him?
People these days, they tend to spray their houses with insecticides, and that's the end of the beetles.
Oh.
But let's assume...
Yes, let's assume...
that he doesn't get fumigated,
okay?
He just keeps wandering about, banging his head, and then he pauses for a second, kind of listening to see if anyone replies, and if there's no reply, he wanders on.
Unfortunately, according to David,
Deathwatch beetles are quite rare these days, so there is a distinct chance the poor male will never find a female.
Oh, this just gets more and more depressing.
Well, I'm laughing again.
And can you tell the same story from the female's perspective?
Yeah.
So she just waits in silence for 3 weeks, and if no one comes, she just
kills everyone and dies. Yeah.
Oh, exactly. God.
She does. She wanders around a little bit, I suppose, in the hope that she might encounter a male. But that is all she does. It's a tedious life, I'm afraid.
But let's imagine, again for the sake of argument, that after the 15 years of chewing and no fumigations for them at all, let's then think, wow, they get really lucky.
He gets a reply.
They find each other.
She makes the noise immediately after she hears the cry of a male. And he then gets very excited because he may have been wandering about banging his head for days. And this little duet gets going. He starts to run around,
banging his head over and over again.
You know, this is his moment. And eventually, by a lot of trial and error, and occasionally they got it wrong and fell off the edge and were never seen again. More often than not, he would eventually find the female, and the males will immediately jump on top of her. And he then continues to drum his head, but this time he's not headbutting the timber, he's whacking her. which, I mean, each to their own, you know, presumably that works for a female Deathwatch beetle. But because they're very short-sighted, they will often jump on the wrong way round. And that's not so good. Because the females can actually control, like he can't force them to mate. So he has to persuade her to cooperate, or else he's going nowhere.
Can humans tell if it's going well?
Well, so usually she carries on replying. So he's banging her in the back of the head, and she's then drumming her head on the wood underneath. And that's usually a good sign that if she carries on banging her head on the timber, that means she's probably going to mate with him within the next minute or two.
But Dave says when he has watched this happen, he's noticed that...
Quite often the females wouldn't mate, though, you know, they'd maybe been sitting there for days waiting for a partner to come along. And then when one finally does and he finally gets to them, they're not interested. You know, it's not good enough.
I thought that they only have 3 weeks.
That is so shocking to me.
This is a very discerning lady, that she chooses death over an ugly mate.
Well, I guess she's not actually choosing. She's hoping that she'll get a better mate. There's another fish in the sea.
Another fish in the sea.
Hopefully. But I thought, well, what's the difference? Why are some males successful and some not? And it quickly became clear that the heavier the male, the more likely he was to be successful.
So is there some explanation for why?
So actually these things, they produce quite staggering amounts of sperm, it turns out.
Whoa, what is what do you mean by staggering?
The average was 13% of his body weight.
13%?
What?
So, if that were us, like, what would that be like?
We were talking about 3 or 4 gallons. So, think about that from, well, it's best not to think about that too much, really. But
that's just so gross.
It's a slightly disturbing.
So the deep tragedy here would be to be a member of this species and to be born
scrawny.
Scrawny.
Yeah.
I mean, just out of curiosity, how big are you?
I'm moderately skinny, so if I was a Death Watch Beetle, I'd be in trouble. Anyway, so what I really wanted to know were the females actually just weighing the males, or was it something that was correlated with being a big male? You know, maybe they were stronger or made a louder noise or something. And so the obvious way to try and find out was to artificially change the weight of the males.
To make tiny fat suits for the...
Well, exactly. Yeah, not quite. But I wish this worked for people. It would be hilarious, but I don't think it does. So we have this stuff called blue tack in the UK. Do you have blue tack over there? I don't know, but it's...
Oh, like sticky tack?
Sticky tack, I guess. You use it to stick posters on the wall and...
So Dave went to the store, bought some of this stuff, and then just beat it up into little bits.
And stuck them on the back of males to make them a little bit heavier.
And for the skinny males?
It worked an absolute treat, these males. But I do feel slightly mean that those poor females, obviously, were getting a bit shortchanged. But hopefully they managed to produce some eggs anyway.
Because in the end, Dave finds these beetles, the males and the females, surprisingly charming. And after all, he does live with them. A lot of them.
They're still in my house. They're still chewing away at the beams. I'm torn, you know, part of me knows that if I don't spray them with some insecticide, then eventually the roof will start to collapse. But it's going to take decades, and I kind of quite like having them there. So for the moment, they've been spared, and I kind of quite like listening to them tapping away in the springtime.
So you're sitting in bed at dawn or dusk, and you hear the quiet banging, and you think...
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, that people thought this was a sinister noise, and actually it's all about love.
Thank you to Dave Goulson, who wrote a book all about these bugs, A Buzz in the Meadow, The Natural History of a French Farm.
And, I didn't mention to you that it's a French farm. He has this little place in France that he goes to 1 month a year, and that's where he communes with his beetle friends.
And has one of the saddest months thinking about, about the struggles of
Did you find it
beetles.
Terribly sad?
I found it made me think that dating in New York was pretty easy.
All right, for people who are feeling, if you're feeling sad, we want to end that problem right away. In the next part of this show, we're going to revisit this story in such a crazily new way for us. The guys from Hamilton, the hot Broadway show, I told some of them this story that you just heard, and they have decided to musicalize the tale, and they will do that right after this brief pause. But during the pause, you know how raunchy this story is? Well, it only gets more so when it's in the musical tell. So you might want to ask your little ones to leave the room around now, and then you should by all means stay for the after party.
This is Melanie calling from Durham, North Carolina. Radiolab is supported in part by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, enhancing public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. More information about Sloan at www.sloan.org.
I'm Robert Krulwich.
I'm Molly Webster.
This is Act Two, in which when I put together these, any story, as you know, I just wander around and tell it to every single person I know. That's part of
truth.
How you do it. Right. So, yeah, it could be strangers. So I was talking to a friend of mine who's in the theater, a guy named Tommy Kail. And I'm talking to him and I'm saying, I'm wondering what's going on in the minds of these little, assuming that they have minds, these little animals. because it seems so unfair. 15 years of chewing and then this. So he said, you know, we could be those Beatles.
Who's the we?
Well, we is an improvisational freestyle group called Freestyle Love Supreme. And it's, now this, I should tell you, Tommy goes to Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Who's no joke.
Who is Hamilton in the hit musical amazing. Hamilton. And he writes, so he says, I'll be one of the Beatles. And then they go to Uktash Ambudkar, who was in a movie called Pitch Perfect where he played a rapper.
Oh, yeah.
And by the way, this is all guys. Like, this is like, you have to think of yourself as in an Elizabethan Beatles situation. Yeah,
this is Shakespearean Death Watch Beatle.
That's right. All the lady parts will be played by males. So Lynn's going to be the woman, and Utkarsh is going to be the man. So here is the male Beatle being the Beatle that he hopes he can be.
Hey ladies, I said the wait is over. Get ready for the beautiful Beatle Casanova. He is I and I am him. The most masculine Beatle by the name of Slim. Now evolution made me small so I could slip through the cracks. I'll be the first one to jump on a lady Beatle's back. But it's hard out here and I'm not playing. The human beings hear me and then they get to spraying. They think that I'm the devil so they get to fumigating. They don't understand that I'm only procreating. But I'm slimmer, so I'm a winner. I finally see the sun peep a shorty and I know that she the one, so I'm like, Beetle, baby doll, let's get involved. I want to give it to you all right here on this log. I've been chewing through that wood for my entire life, and it feels so good to finally find a wife. Yeah, I guarantee I'm your chosen, but can you remind me which end it goes in?
This is hard.
Yeah, so it's hard out there for a Beetle.
But for the female, played by Lin Miranda, I mean, she's going to have her own agenda. She needs to find a guy. It has to be, she hopes it will be the best guy, but I don't know.
Somebody's knocking. Could this be the Beetle I've been waiting for? Somebody's knocking. Babe, is this a mate worth waiting for? My mama told me to never settle. I always did as I was told. I'm looking for a hottie with a body full of sperm and deep down a heart of gold. But when you hear that knocking, and it just sounds so rare, is the grass always greener? Is there a heavier beetle somewhere? Somebody's knocking, but I am a beetle worth waiting for. Somebody's knocking, I'm gonna wait for something more.
The power of the female.
And the sadness for the guy. But this is a Valentine's Day.
You never feel sad for the lady.
No, I'm so.
What if she gets some lame dude and she's like, oh my God, I've waited 15 years for this and I can't do it with you. And she has to move on and fall off the table.
Okay. But now you know that Professor Goulson is our Cupid here. After a fashion.
He's going to save both of our sad souls.
Yes, with the sticky tack. So here is the... This is the kind of a lame Valentine card, but I'm thinking about it. But here is our finish to our own Valentine's tale. A little Romeo and Juliet-ish, actually.
Against all odds, I'm gonna make you mine.
At the end of the day.
Wait, I'm half blind. Where are you?
Fine.
Oh, there you are.
Your way to me.
I've been chewing all my life long, trying to put the work in. Beetle baby doll, don't let me die a virgin. I'm certain a love will burn like embers. I'll be the one and only love you remember. Keep banging your head on that timber. I agree it'd be easier with Tinder. But let me loose inside your caboose so I could give you some of my beetle juice.
Somebody's knocking.
Okay, I know I was playing it cool before, but seriously, I got no clue what I'm doing. So if you could help me out, you'd be doing me a real solid.
You found your way to me.
Little did she know, before I beat it, the doctor helped me. I cheated. Slim wins a... Ugh, I'm dead.
But what a way to go.
Okay, it is time, of course, for us to go. Thanks especially to Freestyle Love Supreme and to Utkarsh Amudkar, otherwise known as UTK, to Thomas Kail and to Lin-Manuel Miranda.
And to our producers on this episode, Soren Wheeler and Simon Adler. Thank you, thank you.
I'm Robert Krolwich.
I'm Molly Webster.
And happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day, Robert.
Yeah, you too. You too.
Message one.
Hi, this is Dave Goulson leaving a message. This is the credits for the show. Radiolab is produced by Jad Abumrad, if that's pronounced correctly. Our staff includes Simon Adler, Brenna Farrell, David Gable, Dylan Keefe, Matt Keelty, Robert Krolwich, Andy Mills, Latif Nasser, Kelsey Padgett, Ariane Wack, Molly Webster, Soren Wheeler, and Jamie York, with help from Alexandra Lee Young, Tracy Hunt, St. Deknahi, it says here, Tam, that must be Stephanie Tam, and Mika Loewinger. Our fact checkers are Eva Dasher and Michelle Harris. And I'm Dave Coulson. Good night.
End of message.